Good evening, folks, and welcome back to the Trinity Tims podcast. I'm joined, as usual, by my colleagues Joe McHugh of Video Celts and James Forrest of the Celtic Blog. And to say that this is going to be a hard-hitting episode is probably an understatement. We're just coming off the back of an abysmal January transfer window, to put it mildly. There probably aren't too many sort of positives that you could take out of it at all, other than the return of Jota. I'm not too sure about Jeffrey Schlupp, but I'm sure we'll discuss Jeffrey Schlupp during the podcast this evening. But I think it's the overall feeling that is surrounding the fans and the club after this debacle, because that's the only word that I would use to describe it. That's kind of, you know, it's brought everybody down, it's brought the tone down. The fact that we sold Kyogo and we didn't replace him with a striker, and you know, it beggars belief. We're still scratching our heads. We're all trying to figure it out. We're all trying to wrap our heads around it. And tonight we're just going to take it apart and we're going to talk it through. And I think this is going to be a bit of a venting session, because there's a bit of venting needs to be done, I would say. So I'm going to start the venting with James Forrest, and I'm going to get his view on what has just gone on for the last 4 weeks and what has been the end result.
Well, first things first, welcome guys to the great Celtic Transfer Window 2025 therapy session, because that's what this is, effectively. This is a therapy session. The only thing is that I feel a wee bit like one of those people who's forever getting used and abused by a variety of partners, and they go into the therapy session and they will blame men or women or whichever sex it is that they feel is letting them down. And I always want to scream at those people, the common denominator is you. It's not them, it's you. Something is wrong with you, the people you choose, the life you choose to lead. You're the problem. And I don't get why the problem here isn't as clear. We've been here before and before and before and before. And it doesn't matter who's in the dugout. It doesn't matter what their plans are, what their vision is. There are always people at our club who know better than them. People who have no coaching certificates, have never taken a day's training in their lives, who know better than our managers what the team needs. And Rodgers in particular must be sick of this, because Rodgers is by a considerable margin the most qualified person who sat in our dugout in decades since Martin O'Neill. And he must be sick of being second-guessed by bean counters and lawyers and people who don't really know what he does on a day-to-day basis. I'm sure we all watched his press conference today, and he put as brave a face on it as he possibly could, but he's pissed off, and you know he's pissed off. And that man's not going to stay here 1 minute longer than he needs to. He has made a commitment to the fans that he will see the 3 years of his term. But once that 3 years is done, he's going to go. He's gone. He is done. He doesn't not need this. He does not need to work in an environment where he's being second-guessed by people who aren't qualified to do it. And it makes me absolutely sick to see that that guy has been ignored yet again. That his wishes have been ignored yet again. That his plans and his vision for this team have been ignored and second-guessed yet again. I don't know what he's doing back here. He should know already that he can't trust these people. They won't deliver for him. And they won't deliver for us either. As long as these people are in charge, our progress will be limited to how many points ahead of the mob across the city that we can finish. We are the biggest club in a one-team league. And on the back of that, these guys are feted. And they're praised and they're glorified simply because we're not a basket case like the club across the city. If that club across the city wasn't going to say, these people would get an actual test. And whenever these people get tested, they fail that test. People forget that prior to Rangers liquidation, we had won 3 titles in a row. Well, Peter the Genius is in charge as the CEO. Some people have forgotten. I haven't forgotten. And it just amazes me that the simplest transfer window that we've probably seen in years has been utterly squandered, and we've emerged from it weaker. It's staggering. It's absolutely staggering.
Yeah, I think staggering. There's just so many words that you could use to describe this, and I just don't think any of them are going to really do it justice. And it's only our board could conspire to do this. Only our board could conspire to do this. Only they could manage to bring us out of the transfer window after qualifying for the knockout stages of the Champions League weaker than we entered it. Only they could conspire to do that. And I agree wholeheartedly with what you're saying, James, in terms of Brendan Rodgers and what this is going to end up. You know, the end result of this is going to be him leaving after 3 years, because if the board does not share his ambition, if the board does not have his vision, if they... I wrote an article earlier on today where I said that I've been in my career 22 years now at the moment. And one of the things that I've noticed about businesses is businesses tend to shift the goalposts all the time. You know, the dangle carrots in front of you, they tell you that they're going to do certain things for you and they're going to promise certain things to you, and then they shift the goalposts. And if there's one club out there that is an absolute expert at shifting goalposts in Celtic, because I have no doubt in my mind that Brendan Rodgers was promised that he would get a striker in return for letting Kyogo go for whatever the 10 million price tag that was, you know, that they were getting for him. I've no doubt that he was told, he was given assurances that he would have a striker by the closure of this window. And whoever made that promise to him, how is he supposed to trust them? How is he supposed to respect them even going forward? I mean, Joe, what's your view on it? I mean, it's just, again, it's hard to just wrap your head around it, really, isn't it?
Not really. It's entirely predictable. You two guys seem a bit more idealistic. I'm more cynical. And on that note, if you're not a happy clapper, please subscribe to the podcast. If your ambitions for Celtic are to be more than one point ahead of our city rivals, please subscribe to the podcast, because some of us think that Europe's a big deal and that we should be able to be doing things there. Constantly dragging ourselves down to the levels across the city is horrendous. It's good enough for most people. I reckon 50% or more of the online Celtic support are quite happy with the transfer window. Beat Dundee tomorrow night, 13 points clear. Send a few WhatsApp messages to the Rangers pals. Ho, ho, ho. And isn't life great being a Celtic supporter? Don't forget the 1990s. But Brendan Rodgers isn't trapped in that mindset. And that's 3 very poor transfer windows out of 4 since he came back. The summer window was decent, but it was too late. He had no outfield players when they went to the pre-season in America. And then trusty McCowan and Engels came in on the last day of the window, and 5 weeks later, they're thrown to the lions den away to Borussia Dortmund. If they'd been over in the USA preparing, then we wouldn't have lost 7-1. It's water under the bridge, but it's same old, same old. I had no expectations that they were going to do things. I had no expectations that they were going to advance and develop, but I was fairly surprised that they managed to weaken the team. You can dress it up whatever way you like. Jota back is great. That's us getting towards what we should be, a full complement of 4 good wingers. But Adam Ida is on his own. There's a busy schedule coming up. Dundee, Raith Rovers, Bayern Munich, Dundee United, and Bayern Munich away in the course of the next fortnight. And try to dress things up that Johnny Kenny is going to play any meaningful part in that. I hope he does, but it's highly unlikely. You get 20 minutes or so away to Ross County, nothing else since. Daniel Cummings played in the Champions League, and I suspect he won't make the Celtic bench anytime soon. So it's been a horrendous window. I think, well, Brendan Rodgers seems to be the optimist. He must be an optimist of coming back to Celtic. But nothing's really changed, and I would suggest that some attitudes have been entrenched. The chairman would rather anyone else was a manager rather than Brendan Rodgers. Brendan Rodgers must be a right pain in the neck for directors. He's quite demanding, but it was very clear today in his media conference. It's a myth that January is a difficult window to sign good players.
No myth, it's a lie, Joe. It's a lie. It's a blatant, brazen lie.
I'll act as if I'm in Parliament and say I can't accuse anyone of being a liar, but we know exactly what it means. But there was no January premium. It is not difficult to get targets. Rodgers never left them with any excuses. And the only explanation we'll get is complete silence. And last year, at the end of February, the chairman came out in the interim accounts and admitted that they'd made a bit of a boo-boo and it's not good policy to stockpile cash and not reinvest it in the business. Well, lo and behold, they've done it again. This time last year, Brendan Rodgers said the club needs to be braver in the transfer market. Well, the club is more cowardly than ever in the transfer market. They're pretty confident they can stay ahead of their friends across the city and win the league. Title 55, that'll be great. But the club is stalling. The Bayern Munich games have been given up on, but for more interest for me is the Champions League qualifiers. We've made a decent start this season in Europe, but I suspect we'll be playing Thursday night football next season. We will not be using this as a building block to progress and move forward. We'll cross our fingers with a draw. We'll be underprepared for the Champions League qualifiers. And if we get through the Champions League qualifiers, it'll be too late in the day to bring in the players that are needed for next season's Champions League or Europa League. And it's deja vu, Groundhog Day. We've been there many, many times. Nothing changes because the managers change. We've had Neil Lennon, Ronnie Dyla, Ange Postecoglou, Brendan Rodgers, but the former chief executive has now got the title of chairman, and he's calling all the shots. And the last thing he wants is any show of ambition, acting like a real football club. The balance sheet is one again, the transfer window. They're probably about 4 or 5 million up from the sale of Bernabeu and the money paid out to bring back Jota. So it's a victory for the balance sheet. Nicholson will be getting congratulated on that. We'll soon be getting the interim accounts, which are to the end of December. Record turnover, record on course for record profits, but there's a lot of dissatisfied fans. There's not much you can do about it except express their anger on podcasts, on social media. But it wasn't a great shock. And anyone expecting anything different in the coming summer transfer window, be prepared for disappointment. And if we're having this podcast again in 52 weeks' time, almost certainly it'll be the same issues. So I'm incredibly cynical about it. I've got good reasons for that. And I don't see anything changing. We'll stay ahead in Scotland. We'll stay adrift in Europe. And it'll be self-congratulations. Everybody will be happy. Dividends all round. We're the best run club in Britain, the best run club in Europe, the best run club in the universe. And all we're doing is staying that far ahead of our City rivals. Will spit it out. There's a semi rant, not quite of James's epic post Kyogo proportions, but that's about as angry as I can get by it. It's so predictable.
Well, I think probably one of the overriding things that I took from the press conference this evening with Brendan Rodgers is he kept, I suppose, referring to the fact that he has to work with what he's got. He also, throughout the conference, at one point he said, there's no point in getting the hump. There's no point in getting worked up about it. And, you know, I still have to go out and do a job. I still have to work with these guys. Nothing's changed. Nothing. There's nothing we can do now about this. And that's the reality, I suppose. There is nothing we can do now. It's done. It's finished. And I think we all know what's going to happen here. What's going to happen here is Dyson Maeda is probably going to be moved into the middle. It's going to be a case of Jota on the left wing and Kun on the right wing, barring injuries, of course. These guys will probably tear it up. And Brendan Rodgers, being the manager that Brendan Rodgers is, he will probably prove that he can get a tune out of Maeda in the middle. He'll probably prove that he can get more of a tune out of Adam Maeda, and the signs are there after the last few games that Adam Maeda has played. He scored 3 goals in the last 2 games, and he's probably back on form as well. So he did make the point of saying that, I don't really, you know, care where the goals come from, as long as the goals come. It doesn't bother me if I have a striker who scores 40 and the winger's only scored 3, but we've scored plenty of goals this season. But what bothers me most of all in what he's saying is that there is no doubt that he will make this work, and by making it work, he's going to make the board look good. He's going to make them look like they're geniuses and that they made the right decision here. They sold Kyogo, they banked 10 million, and he made it work with what he was left with. What do you think, James?
Yeah, that's probably the most frustrating thing about this. That's probably the most frustrating thing about it. They're relying on Rodgers being able to galvanise this team and get them over the line. And at the end of it, once they've posted profits and once we posted in our double or treble, these people are again going to be hailed by all the usual suspects as the geniuses behind it, when nothing could be further from the truth. Listen, I am fighting mentally to control my temper tonight. I am really pissed off. Right. I cannot put it more bluntly than to say that the manager and the people who are supposed to support him and back him are working at cross purposes. Actually, I can put it more bluntly to say that. These people are actively working against him and working against his agenda for the club. That's it, in a nutshell. It cannot be anything else. They have blatantly ignored his wishes in this window. Blatantly ignored them. To put him in a nearly impossible position where he has to deliver on their behalf with an inferior setup than he had before the window opened. All he had to do in this window was sign one player. One left-sided attacking player. That was it. We brought in Jota, but we lost our star striker. He threw it. And we'll get, I'm sure at some point, we will get to the whole move Maeda into the middle bullshit. I'm sure we will get to it. I'm happy to discuss it at great length. But there is no question that this is a weaker team, and Rodgers said it tonight. He said it today. He is also trying manfully to keep his anger out of this and to keep his emotional self in check. But he knows that he's been grafted. He knows he's been done over here. And he knows that at the end of the season, once he's delivered yet again, once he's got us a Champions League place yet again, that he won't be supported in the summer the way he should be, that we won't be prepared as we should be for the qualifiers that are necessary to net us the next £40 million jackpot. He knows he won't be. We know he won't be. But still, he's got to go out there and put a brave face on it and do the job. And these people are laughing at him, and they're laughing at us. There's no other way to put it. These people are not working in the best interest of our club, and I don't care how many of their groveling apologists say that they are. They're not. They're blatantly not. They're obviously not. They've sent a very clear message to the manager. And in doing so, they've also sent a very clear message to the players. The team sheet is not the priority. The balance sheet is. That's it. That's the message. And it's like James, a lump. And Rodgers has to deal with it. Rodgers will deal with it. But he'll only deal with it for another 18 months.
On that front, the supreme irony is the £10 million fee from Rennes for Kyogo won't be spent on Celtic. It'll go straight to HMRC.
Of course it will. That's
the corporation tax because we're making ridiculous profits, whereas any competent business would be reinvesting that money. So everyone clapping and cheering, whoa, £10 million for a 30-year-old. That £10 million, we will not see any of it. That's going to HMRC, and the Celtic team is weakened. And as we found out, when you sell your striker in the middle of a Champions League campaign, other clubs aren't daft. They see you banking that, and there's an extra fee put on it, but still very affordable. And it seems like in the summer, when Arne Engels was basically the only option for a strong midfielder, and when Adam Ida was the only option as a striker, Matthias Kvistgaarden, I've not got that right, he was the only option. Again, a competent business. If Brøndby aren't playing ball, then move on to plans B, C or D, or then get somebody in and loan. But Brøndby knew Celtic had no other options. They knew they could keep saying no, and it was only going to go up. And again, it's managed. If it was a problem over 2, 3, even £4 million, when you've got 70 to 100 million sitting in the bank, and you're about to send 10 million of that off to HMRC's profit, nothing makes sense. But it's just, let's not do anything. Don't do anything hasty. And look, we're 10 points ahead. We're 13 points ahead. We're going to win the league. And again, for the majority of Celtic supporters, that's a be-all and end-all. There'll be a wee bit of resentment here and there. But for most supporters, fantastic. We're going to win the league again. And the thought of progress, advancing, realising the potential that the club could have with a manager like Brendan Rodgers. I heard Jota's podcast today, and Jota's absolutely purring with enthusiasm for working with Brendan Rodgers. He thinks that there's extra potential that he can have developed working with Brendan Rodgers. Other players have told him, you'll love it, it's great here. But unfortunately, we're more than halfway through Brendan Rodgers' 3-year contract. I don't think there's any chance he's going to... if he stays, the Celtic that he stays with will be completely different from the Celtic he's been at for the last 18, 19, 20 months. I don't think there's any prospect of him staying. It's another wasted opportunity. And they were very lucky when Ange Postecoglou rolled into town. Ange was desperate for a job in Europe under any circumstances. Yep, I'll come on my own. Yep, I'll take the existing backroom staff. I'll spend whatever budget you give me. You'll be very, very fortunate to find another one like that. Neil Lennon's on the sidelines. And if it's not Neil Lennon, it'll be almost in-house. It'll be John Kennedy or Scott Brown. And none of them, sadly, are qualified for the job. But that's the direction we're going in. And I don't know what breaks it. I don't know what breaks the cycle. But we'll keep on watching. We'll keep on observing. We'll keep on commenting. And we'll keep on getting abuse and anger from other people, because we should be happy clappers. We should be delighted. But we're all more realistic. There's a big world outside of Scotland. We should be advancing in Europe. And there's no sign of that whatsoever. None at all.
Yeah, I mean, I just have this vision of the board standing on the glass ceiling looking down at Brendan Rodgers and saying, this is as high as you go. You don't go any higher than this. And throughout all of the 21st century, pretty much, they have put a ceiling on our ambition and as far as we can go. And I think Brendan Rodgers realizes that now. And he realizes that unless there's drastic change at board level, nothing is going to change at Celtic. It's the one constant throughout the whole of this century that has never changed. And it's It's unhealthy for a football club, and we've discussed this, all of us, at one point or another in our blogs, that it's unhealthy for a club to have the same people in charge for the length of time that these people have been in charge. Yeah. And they keep making the same cock-ups over and over again. And it's like you said, Joe, it's the Groundhog Day. It's the never-ending cycle that just never changes. But you just ask yourself, how the hell can you bring about change as long as these people are here? Because nothing will change. I mean, I have to say, this morning when I woke up and I saw that Jeffrey Schluck was the only addition that we brought in, I said to you guys, I knew before I went to bed nothing was going to change. Nobody else was going to be added onto the squad. But I had that same feeling of totally being underwhelmed, like I did when we signed Yusuf Malumbu. It was like a rerun of 2018 all over again. You know, I know it's different circumstances in a slightly different way. I mean, well, not really. I mean, we let go of our top striker in the last day of the window, knowing full well we couldn't replace him. At least this time it looks worse because we had the time to replace Kyogo, you know, and we didn't. We had no chance in 2018. But it's just, I mean, you said you're a cynic, and like myself and James are saying, we can't wrap our head around. What I can't wrap my head around is we're in relatively uncharted territory again once more in Europe. You know, it's 12 years since we got to the knockout stages. It's over 12 years, and it's been a long time since we got to the knockout stages. So I suppose some part of me thought that these guys would not conspire to screw it up. You know, I held out some hope that they would not screw it up. They would not weaken us going into such a game, such a monumental game as we're going into. If we had a striker, if we had a new striker, whether it was Matthias Kvistgaard and whatever, look, this is a daunting task regardless. Playing Bayern Munich is a daunting task regardless. I don't rate our chances, and it'll be a miracle if we get through that time. But the fact is, if we had given ourselves a fighting chance by bringing in another striker, it might not be much of a fighting chance, but it's more of a fighting chance than we had or we have now at the closure of the window and the way it is. So, it seems, and Chris Sutton touched on that in his articles, like the board have just put on the ceiling of Bayern Munich, that's it, we're done. The ambition should be to go beyond that, to make as much money as you possibly can out of the Champions League to further strengthen this squad. And I have no doubt in my mind that's the way Brendan Rodgers views it, that's the way he sees it, that's the ambition he has for this club. And these guys are completely stifling that ambition. And they will continue to do so as long as they are in charge of Celtic. They will continue to stifle any progression or any ambition that the manager has, no matter who he is. And why the hell would Brendan Rodgers want to sign on for more of that crap? What's your view on that, James?
I wrote a piece today. I put it up about 5 o'clock tonight. About the message that we've sent to everybody in Europe, basically, that there is a level beyond which we don't feel like we belong. Now, I said to you the other day, Joe, I think it was the other day, on WhatsApp, that I don't hate these people, the people who run our club. I've tried very hard not to, and I genuinely don't hate them. But I recognise that they are limited people and they have limited ambition and they have limited imagination. They are in many ways like a family who have been ruling one of those third world tin pot dictatorships.
Yeah.
And they took over at first. All these brilliant ideas and all these promises. We're going to feed the people. We're going to build hospitals. We're going to build schools. And over time, they've just got fatter and greedier and more corrupt and more insular. And they don't want to hear opposition. And all the promise that was there in the beginning is gone. And most of them can't even remember that they ever made those promises in the first place. Whatever ambition there was has completely evaporated. over the course of time that they've been there. I didn't think this was going to be a massively game-changing window, but it didn't have to be a massively game-changing window. We needed one player. I keep on saying this. We needed one player. Alec Valley was one of those things. It happens. We could have replaced him. We did replace him. And it didn't provide us with any sort of a challenge to do that. I think that Jeffrey Sloop's an upgrade on Alec Valley. He's definitely an upgrade on Greg Taylor. I'm really happy with that signing. Had that signing been made in the context of signing Jota and bringing in a striker, I would have considered this window a success. But I never believed from the moment we confirmed that we were selling Kyogo that this window would be a success. I never believed we would adequately replace Kyogo. I didn't expect us not to replace him at all. I just didn't think we would do it adequately. But the moment we sold Kyogo, that was when the message was sent to Rodgers and to the players and to the team and to the fans and to Aston Villa and whoever we got next. We aren't serious people at this level. We're not a serious club at this level. We don't take ourselves seriously at this level. We don't act like we belong at this level. The people on our board don't believe we belong at this level.
James, there's a term for that. It's called imposter syndrome.
The reason we were able to sell Kyogo prior to the Aston Villa game is that they didn't believe we would win the Aston Villa game, no matter who played. They didn't have any faith in Rodgers and in the team to deliver any kind of result that night. The reason they didn't go and sign a striker is that they believe we have enough domestically. Don't worry about it. Bayern Munich are going to beat us anyway. Who cares whether we sign a striker or not? Now, I know there's a lot of your fans who agree with that. Fine. That's cool. That's great. But the message you're sending to the opponent before they even show up is that we are, as a Bayern Munich player has allegedly said, the easiest draw they could possibly have got. The least scary team left in this tournament. And the reason we're the least scary team left in this tournament is that we act like we're glad just to be here. Like we are guests who never expected to be invited to the party and are happy to sit in the corner and watch everybody else having a good time. It's pathetic. It's pathetic. And the really bad thing about it is that it sends a message to the manager that the club has no ambition to move forward in Europe. And that whatever he was told upon coming here was a lie. It tells the players who are here, you're wasting your time here. All this is for you is a stop-off shop to your next move. That's who we are as a club. We're limited in our thinking. We're limited in our ambition. We have reached our ceiling, and we're not going to go any further than this. We have no interest in going any further than this because that would take imagination. It would take daring. It would take a plan, which we don't have. So many parts of our club don't function as they should. So many parts of our club are run on the basis that we're like a bowling club. We're a wee group of committee members who don't want to change it and who don't want to rock the boat, who don't want to take any risks. It's absolutely gobsmacking that these people have convinced themselves that they have all the answers and they don't have the answers that matter. None of them do. And I mean, I read some people say the other day, if the manager's getting messed about, Dermot Desmond will step in. And he'll take charge and he'll make sure the manager gets what he wants. Well, where is our absentee landlord? Where is he? What was his contribution to this transfer window? Where was his backing for the guy in the dugout? His guy, apparently. We're always told that. This is Dermot's guy. Where is he? Because this can only be about two things. This can only be about two things. Either Dermot Desmond shares the same ambitions as the rest of the board, i.e. none, in which case all Rodgers is another whipping boy for him, or he's a coward. Dermot, you're a coward. You didn't support him. You didn't overrule the people here. You didn't give the guy backing. If that's the case, you're a coward. and you know where I am. You can send me the rat. I'll wipe my ass with it. I'm not impressed by any of this quote that Brendan is Dermot's guy and Dermot will stand up for him. You haven't. You failed. They're walking all over him. And the guy's going to walk away at the end of his contract. And that'll be as much down to you as anybody else.
But James, the point you made there, right, about Dermot Desmond, right, that Brendan Rodgers is Dermot Desmond's guy, right? And if Brendan Rodgers is being messed around, Dermot Desmond will step in. I mean, that almost portrays the image of the board as a bunch of unruly kids who are getting out of hand and they need their dad, Dermot, to step in to tell them to back off and leave Brendan alone. You know,
he did it before. He called Law and Rodgers to London or Dublin the last time Rodgers was here during the John McGinn summer transfer fiasco. He called the tournament in London, knocked their heads again and said, basically, you both work for me. So find a way to work together.
Yeah, but it's
Brendan's getting pissed all over again.
Yeah, but like it seems to me like it's just the same bitter
divide. Who in that club's got his back? Who in that club has his back? Who in that club is going to bat for him every day? Who is fighting for what he needs and what he wants? And to get his ideas across. This whole club stinks of defeatism and loser syndrome when it comes to the bigger picture. We're not allowed to have nice things. We're the only club in Europe who would just fold the hand and sell their best player because him and his agent wanted a move. We're the only club in Europe who has that as a policy, an actual policy.
Yeah. But you also made the point, James, you know, we don't feel we belong at this stage in the Champions League. And I said there that, like, this club suffers from imposter syndrome because they feel that they're imposters at this level in the Champions League because we haven't been there in so long.
These people are imposters at this level. They can swan around in neon for the Champions League draw all they want, right? But every club wants to get us because every club thinks that we are weak because they're weak.
Yeah.
The people who run our club are weak.
That's what we can see. But, I mean, the reality here is that we have to look forward to some degree. We can't just sit and wallow in what has happened in the January transfer window. I mean, I like to be fair, it's not everybody for six in terms of the disappointment of it, in terms of what's come out of it. But as Joe said, we didn't expect anything to come out of it. What, you know, we didn't expect that it would be a massive transfer window. We didn't expect that it would be a window where we brought in a raft of players, you know. We actually said at the outset when we discussed it that we thought they might bring in one or two signings. Effectively, they brought in three. They brought in Jota, they brought in Schlupp, and they brought in Tierney. But Tierney is being replaced by Schlupp for the 6 months before the end of the season, or 4 months before the end of the season, whatever. But what we didn't expect was that they'd weaken the squad and that they'd sell our top striker. And that's, I think, as you said yourself earlier on, you'd have considered the transfer window a relative success had we got a striker. We didn't. And ultimately, that's what we're talking about tonight, and that's where the disappointment is coming from. And I don't think disappointment even actually covers it properly. I don't think that's the word that you use. It's just, I don't know, but I just, for as long as I've been a supporter of this club, I've been around the block and I've done this so many bloody times where I feel like I'm banging my fucking head against the wall. Excuse my language. I just feel like I'm banging my head against the wall. And people, as you said this evening, James, they tend to batter us on our... I mean, I'm getting highly abusive messages on the Facebook, the Read Celtic Facebook, for what I've been saying. But there's nothing that I'm saying that isn't reality. People, that's the biggest problem with our club. They don't want to face reality. And the reality is we can be a hell of a lot better than we are. That's the reality. And that's what we want. That's what we, the three bloggers who write, and me who writes in Read Celtic, Joe who writes in Video Says, and you who write in the Celtic blog. We want the best for this club. I don't want to spend half my time bashing the board. I wish I could spend my time praising the board and saying they're doing a brilliant job. But I can't, because they don't give me reason to. So, what do people expect me to say? They're brilliant in a one-horse league? you know, they're excellent. I mean, what do you think, Joe? I mean, it's just
they're lazy old men. There's nothing. There's no drive. There's no energy. There's no enthusiasm. Nobody on the board has got any real understanding of what football's about. I mean, when you've got an accountant and a sports lawyer, not just a top sports lawyer. I mean, what on earth is a top sports lawyer in Scotland? I mean, what? I mean, Michael Nicholson brings nothing to Celtic. Celtic bring him a nice salary. Not quite as nice as the salary as his mentor, Peter Lowe, used to take. These guys, it's just a case of just keeping things ticking over, throw the supporters a log every now and then, keep them sweet. It would require some hard work for Celtic to reach their potential, and that's to be as good as Bruges are. Bruges, we drew with Bruges, and they had a bit of an up and down campaign, but they made it through to the last 24. They've got a fairly young team. They regularly sell their best players, and that requires scouting, development, and the missing ingredient of bringing through your own players. I mean, it's pretty sad when Brendan Rodgers is ticking off Daniel Cummings by saying, look at Callum McGregor. Callum McGregor made his debut in 2014. There's been an awful lot of young players come through at Celtic and disappeared at Celtic since Callum McGregor came through. That's one source of players that is just completely dried up. They don't come through. But getting decent scouting, decent development, and bringing in players. I mean, look, in the last week, we've been linked with a £12 million striker in Denmark and a £6-7 million winger from Denmark. We really should be able to produce some of our own players now and then that can fill those gaps instead of constantly having to be scouting. So there's very little right at Celtic. They know the buttons to press. They can be fairly guaranteed their 50,000 season ticket sales. With 10 years of New Balance, and then they finally twigged. Celtic supporters were absolutely desperate for Adidas. Get a deal with Adidas and the money will pour in hand over fist. You can bring out St. Patrick's Day strips that will never see the light of day, and folk will be falling over themselves to be the first in the street, the first in the supporters' bus that are wearing it. So they do all the easy things, but anything involves a bit of graft. I don't know what our doctor, our head of operations, Paul Tisdale's doing. I suspect that he was able to identify players, recommend players, and Michael Nicholson was unable to complete the negotiations and bring them to Celtic. And that's because Michael Nicholson is not a decision maker. When he's in negotiations, he's on the phone, he's referring back to the boss. What do you think of this? Just hold fire. Wait for now. I'll see if I can find something a bit better. So it's laziness, complacency, and nine times out of ten we'll finish in top of the league in Scotland, but there could be that 10th season every now and then. And this season has been the aberration in Europe. We've done quite well in Europe. We made the most of an advantageous draw. We did very well. If we had been horrendous, then Young Boys and Slovan Bratislava would have picked up some points. We beat those teams, and a few outstanding results, beating Leipzig at home, getting a draw at home to Bruges was a decent result. Getting a draw away to Atalanta was a fantastic result, but I don't think anyone can be confident those results are going to be built on next season, and it's because of laziness. They won't put in the graft. They won't do the hard work. The attitude to the Bayern Munich game is horrendous. It's a friendly, it's a fundraiser. Let's go along. Cha-cha-cha. Oh, Celtic's back in the big stage. Bayern Munich are loving it. They'll come over. I mean, we should be fielding our very best team against Bayern Munich, which would have included Kyogo. We should have had one other player joining. If Maeda wasn't suspended and we'd an hour of Maeda followed up by half an hour of Jota and Kyogo through the middle. Kyogo gets replaced by Adam Ida. then we could give Bayern Munich a decent game at home. We did the last time. It was one each for about 5-10 minutes, then we lost 2-1, but we played really well. James Forrest had a great game. McGregor scored in the Champions League. It was uplifting, that match, but I don't think there's many folk going with any expectations or hope or whatever to the game next week, and that's because the clubs gave up on it and they're happy to be here. They'll exit it, and then who knows what happens next with Celtic in the Champions League. But as I say, I don't know how we break the cycle. I don't know if Brendan Rodgers is meant to go Tonto at the end of the season and make demands. He's not going to rock the boat in mid-season, but there's that. If any of the happy clappers, if any of the cheerleaders can put something in the comments where we're missing out, Celtic are going the right direction, we're making progress in certain areas, please inform us, let us know what we're missing, and we'll take it on board. But there's nothing positive there, and it'll be same old, unless Rodgers goes absolutely nuts in the summer. It'll be the same situation next season again.
Can I say something?
Yeah, for a reason.
Damn it, if you're listening, you'll have to excuse my earlier frustration. Because here's what I know about Dermot Desmond. Dermot Desmond is not a coward. Dermot Desmond is the only person on our board, the only person connected with the upper echelon of our club who actually built a business, who actually is, in effect, a self-made guy. And I wrote about this earlier on today. This is part of the problem. We don't have entrepreneurs and risk takers on our board. We don't. We have, as Joe pointed out, accountants and sports lawyers. That's it. But these aren't risk takers, and he is. And he's the one guy who actually could, if he wanted to, fix all of this, put it all right, every bit of it. I don't know why he allows raging mediocrities to run this club. I don't know why he allows it. I don't know why he permits it. If he is a strong, most influential person at the club, I don't know why he permits this. Because he wouldn't allow this in any other business with which he's associated. This is a much bigger issue than just a transfer window or just failure to back a manager. I don't believe that there is another Dermot Desmond business where he would have allowed them to hire the former CEO's son to a major, hugely important and consequential position without an open process, without the requisite experience. I don't know why he permitted that. I don't know why he permits the entire academy structure to fail year on year, as Joe says, not to produce a single first team regular since 2012. It's a scandal. It's a scandal. And not only is it a scandal in terms of what it means for the first team, it's a scandal for what it means in terms of the balance sheet, because that's a lot of money we spend on the academy, a lot of money. And almost all of it is wasted if it doesn't produce a single football player. And you look at the academy structure and who runs the academy structure, and it's packed to the gills with raging mediocrities, friends of people at the club, ex-players at the club. Nobody articulating a proper vision. Nobody putting a European-style structure in place. Because these people are all feather-bedded in there. And they even promoted Darren O'Day the other day. Last season, they promoted Darren O'Day. So let me tell you a story. I said I was going to talk about Daniel Cummings on this podcast. So I'll give you an example of what is permitted at this club that shouldn't be. I'm familiar with the Daniel Cummings story because I wrote a story about Daniel after he scored his first couple of youth league goals. And I got contacted by a member of Daniel's family, and it turns out that they're actually part of our family on my mum's side, the extended family. And when Matty Rose passed away at Christmas, we were at the funeral in the wake, and a bunch of these people were there, and I got chatting to them, and they've been filling me in on what's been going on with Daniel. The other day, I got contacted by them, and they were telling me that Daniel has finally been offered a deal by the club, but O'Day wouldn't let him see the offer. Right? So the family thought that there was some reason why he wasn't being presented with the offer. And his auntie said to me, I think they're embarrassed. So I asked, like, tell me more, because this sounds ridiculous. She said that Cummings was approached by O'Day and McManus in November to start doing some prep work for pre-season next year. And it was at that point that Cummings told them, I don't have a contract beyond this year. And they didn't know that. They didn't know that. They didn't know that their star striker was out of contract at the end of this season. And his auntie and his mother were flabbergasted at that. And their attitude was, if these people can't even read a spreadsheet, what business do they have thinking they can coach our kids? They're hopeless. They don't have a clue. These people don't have a clue. I've heard so many stories about our academy system failing its kids and failing the players we're trying to bring through. Even if Daniel had signed a 3-year, 4-year deal with our club, and he hasn't, he signed for West Ham. He signed a pre-contract agreement with West Ham. Even if he'd signed a 3 or 4 year deal with us, his only two options are to go back and play in the Lowland League or go out on loan somewhere that they pick. And I don't think that he trusts anybody under the first team management structure. And he is not the only one. Vata's people didn't trust them. Daniel Kelly's people didn't trust them. The problems are much bigger than one transfer window. There is dysfunction at every level of this club. And the only guy who can change it is the guy in Ireland. And I don't know why he tolerates it.
Well, it's a strange one in that regard when you consider what you said there earlier on, James, and all that he has managed and built up so many businesses. And I would imagine all the people that are running those businesses for him went through strict vetting processes, went through serious interview processes, and so on and so forth. Yet he has a major football club which has no vetting process whatsoever for its recruits at every level. And it baffles me to think, like, and just what you've said there about the whole youth system and how that works and how unprofessional it actually is. And I made a point earlier on today where I said, you know, most businesses have KPIs, key performance indicators. The business I work in has KPIs. Everything is structured around KPIs. I would imagine most of the businesses that Dermot Desmond has have KPIs. And all of his guys who are running those businesses are held to those KPIs. We never, ever see evidence of KPIs at Celtic Football Club. And it's simply because it's a given. Every season, it's expected that we are competing for all three trophies. That's now a given. So therefore, that can't even be considered. It's just a given KPI. It can't even be considered a KPI anymore. And outside of that, what is there? There's progress in Europe. That might be a KPI. But I don't think that Brendan Rodgers is handed a set of KPIs every season and told, this is what you have to do. You have to win. You have to win the League Cup, you have to win the Scottish Cup, you have to get to the knockout stages of Europe. I don't think there's any set parameters, which therefore feeds into the fact that there is no strategy at the club. The strategy for Glasgow Celtic at this moment in time is to exist in stasis. Just flatlining. Same level, not up, not down, not up, not down. And when an inkling of progress comes along, or an inkling of, you know, something like progressing into Europe comes up, the brakes are put on. Because it's like I said earlier on, it's imposter syndrome. We don't belong here. We shouldn't be here. We're not good enough to compete here. And that's the mentality. That's the mentality of the people who are running our club. And it's not as if this is something new, right? I mean, we've seen it time and time and time and time again. We've spoken about it ad nauseum. It's not changing. It's never going to change. And you were right. The only man who can change it is Dermot Desmond. He is the only man who can change this. And the big question here is, why is he not changing? What do you think, Joe?
Celtic do deliver their KPI. Their KPI is to turn a profit. As long as it's a profit, Dermot Desmond's not shown any interest in it. That's long and short of it. There's no graphs. It's not like other industries where you can chart it against similar competitors. There's not many competitors like Celtic. We know that we should be like Ajax, who are having a bad time just now, but whether it's Ajax, PSV, Feyenoord, Porto, Sporting Lisbon, Bruges, we should be up amongst those clubs. But all that matters is creating a profit. As long as a profit, there's no big struggles, up or down a little bit, so what? But on the youth front, very small correction, but since Cal McGregor came through in 2014, Kieran Tierney came through a year later. Cal McGregor, the way that Cal McGregor's got held up, Cal McGregor went down to Notts County and it was a case of, hopefully you can make something of your career, son. Cal McGregor finished a season at Notts County. They changed manager. I think it was Chris Kawamia was the manager to begin with. McGregor did well under him. Change of manager, I think it was Sean Derry, and he didn't get much playing time. It was a bit more basic with Sean Derry. I'm pretty certain that Carlisle United were in talks with Celtic to buy Callum McGregor. I think they were offering 30,000. If they'd found another 20,000, Callum McGregor could have been theirs. So as a stroke of good fortune. And on the youth front, Celtic want to put up a good display in the UEFA Youth League. So they've got, this year it was only six matches this year. Previous years it was six matches. And they hold on to their best players, their best under-19s, so they can put a decent showing in the UEFA Youth League. And in between times, those players are playing in the Lowland League, Cumbernauld Colts, Caledonian Braves, Stirling Uni, Civil Service Strollers, and it's a complete death trap for the players. They're not going to advance. But Celtic hold their head up high. They do quite well in the UEFA Youth League, and it's no pro... Those six matches don't advance the players' careers. So they get those six games. Their peers, their Lennon Millers, their guys that are at other football clubs are getting real matches, getting tested, and they're developing and coming on. So that's just one of the many areas. But as long as Celtic turn over a profit, Dermot Desmond's not going to get upset in the golf course. He gets a text message after the games. Now and then he'll look in a match, but... It's no great passion of his, and again, I don't see any way out. I think
why doesn't he just sell to someone who is interested?
Because they might turn it around and make it profitable. Alan Brazil was teasing last week that he was getting text messages and things about things happening, but Dermot Desmond, he bought into Celtic in 1995. He's got nothing to lose by hanging on to it. And so, someone else might come. See if someone else came in and there's a European Super League, or incredibly, we get an invite to join the EPL, he'd be kicking himself. So he'll hang on to it. He's been in for the long run. He's been a Celtic shareholder for the best part of 30 years now. He's not going to bail out at this stage in case something exciting might be around the corner. So it's another one. It's the status quo. There's not going to be any change. James, you were getting agitated. Something I said about Kieran Tierney or Callum McGregor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How do you go?
Yeah, I know that story well, mate. I know the Kieran Tierney and the Callum McGregor story well, and it's just further evidence of what I'm saying. Because a lot of heads should have rolled for what happened with Kieran Tierney and Callum McGregor. Kieran Tierney and Callum McGregor, I think, were both headed for an absolute dead end at Celtic Park. Except that we had a manager who understood what he was looking at, who knew what he was looking at when he saw those two players. And If my information on Kieran Tierney in particular is concerned, Kieran Tierney was something like the third choice left back in the B team.
Yep.
When Roy Dyer overruled.
Aidan McAuliffe was ahead of him. Aidan McAuliffe went on loan to Clyde, never quite worked out, and he achieved a bit of fame in the summer when he joined in a Scotland training session. He's a Scotland kit man now, but he was probably ahead of Kieran Tierney. And there was debate whether Tierney was a left-sided midfielder, a wing-back, or a left-back. And
this is a little thing that they've done more than once. They've done it with Adam Montgomery as well. Adam Montgomery's never a left-back in his life. As anyone who ever watched Adam Montgomery knows full goddamn well. And these people try to convert him into a left-back. It blows my mind. But Tierney was on the way out. Tierney was going nowhere at Celtic until Ronnie Dyer spotted Tierney's potential and couldn't understand why nobody else at the club had spotted it. And Callum McGregor was headed down the same road until Ronnie looked at him and said, well, we're not letting this guy go. This guy's a class act. He's staying. He's staying. And Ronnie was the guy who started turning McGregor into the player he is right now, the defensive midfielder. Other than Ronnie Dyer, we wouldn't have seen either of those two. We'd never have heard of either of those two. And heads should have rolled all over the club over that fiasco. That two absolute standouts like that were completely missed by everybody in our academy structure. It's disgusting. It's absolutely disgusting. It makes me wonder how many other top talents have missed over here.
Yep.
How many other top talents have let walk out the door.
But that's guys, this is the fundamental problem with Celtic. There is zero accountability. Nobody is held accountable for cock-ups at Glasgow Celtic. And that's the big issue. You know, I mean, it goes back to what you said earlier on, James, where these people think they're doing a fantastic job and they see themselves as some kind of geniuses, or that they are geniuses. They believe this because nobody questions them, nobody holds them accountable for the things that they mess up on. I mean, if they perchance see this and what we're talking about, they'll just see us as a bunch of upstarts. And as far as they're concerned, we're talking shite. You know, they know better than us. Of course they know better than us. That's their attitude. They have... Yeah, they obviously suffer from serious superiority complex. You know, because they believe that everything they do is right. But it's easy to be the way they are in the one horse league. I mean, because nobody challenges them. And because nobody challenges them, they're not held accountable because they're delivering the bottom line every year and then some, stockpiling cash. So what end? What good is over 100 million in a bank account not being used, it's gathering interest and paying corporation tax. That's about all it's being used for. So, I mean, the other thing as well that I wanted to touch on, actually, and before I forget about this, there was a late flurry for Lennon Miller as well. And the chairman came out and said, Caldwell, the chairman of Motherwell came out, the CEO of Motherwell came out and said that there was a derisory offer made for him. Now, who made that derisory offer? I can pretty much guarantee it was our club, and they probably offered about 2 million, maybe 1.5 million in relation to the asking price of 4 that Motherwell were looking for. And there was some sort of a, you know, flurry of interest yesterday that it might be happening, but it didn't happen. Because Motherwell were lowballed and they were
Can I ask you guys a question that might clear up the Lennon Miller thing? Do any of you guys know how long he has left in his contract?
He's got May 2026. So this summer, he's in the final year of his contract.
My guys were right about that. They actually said that to me today. When I was trying to puzzle out the Lennon Miller thing. And they said, well, he's got 18 months left in his contract. Who does that remind you of? It's a John McGinn-style situation. Celtic thinking they can play hardball with a team. Because the guy's nearly end his deal. But all that's going to do, of course, is it's going to open the door for somebody else to come in and get him instead, and we're going to miss it. This has got John McGinn written all over it. We think that we can blow him, Motherwell, because the guy will have a year to go at the end of the season. We think we can blow them, make a derisory offer, and say, we'll just come and take him on a free transfer this time next year. No, we fucking won't. No, we won't. There's no way he's still at Motherwell this time next year. No way.
With Jordan McGinn, we had a Celtic season ticket holder, the son of a former chairman, and the Hibs manager at the time was Neil Lennon, who some might say is quite Celtic friendly. I suspect there's not quite the same bonds at Motherwell. If a derisory offer's been put in, I think they'll be doubling their efforts to make sure that he goes anywhere but Celtic this summer.
Yep, that's a fact.
Well, we can make sure of that by not committing properly. And this is what really drives me crazy, and this is what Rodgers was alluding to at the end of the Aston Villa game. This stuff about it's very hard to do business in January and players only available in January, that's a bunch of BS, as we all know. Because at least two alleged striker targets that we had on our list would have been available had we been willing to pay the going rate for them. Now, what's the going rate? Well, the going rate, I would say, and again, Joe, I'm not going to try and pronounce this guy's name any more than you are. Kvistgaarden? Is that it? Have I got it right?
I don't know.
When we were first linked with him, what is it, 18 months ago, 2 years ago now? The price was £4 million and that was too high for us. So rather than pay it at the time, which would have got us a player who, by all accounts, is very decent, we waited, and then it was £6 million. Then it was £8 million. And then we sold Kyogo, of course, and we wondered why it jumped another £2 million. And the fact is, had we just been willing to negotiate in good faith with them before Kyogo was sold, knowing that that might happen, we probably could have got that guy for £7 or £8 million. And it's a lot of money. It's a lot of money. It doesn't seem like a lot of money right now. In light of the fact that we're going through the rest of the season, we only had him either. The other guy, Strelick, is it? Was available for £8 million had we been willing to pay it. And again, that's probably a markup from what we would have gotten for before we sold our star striker and advertised to all of Europe that we were desperate to sign someone. But we just wouldn't quite get there when it came to the money. And Rodgers is right about that. There's no excuse for that. These players were available. We just didn't want to pay what their teams said they were worth. That's it. And that's the bottom line. And that's why we failed. We didn't fail because of the unavailability of players. We failed because of two things. Unavailability of ambition by your board. And they just didn't want to spend that much. Simple as that.
Yeah, well, we don't want to spend it, but we're happy to let it build and build and build and build. So it's no good to anybody, because anytime we need to buy a player, you know, that we badly need, we won't pay the money because we're being, you know, they're playing hardball with us. So we're not going to pay the money. So like, it's cash 22. We let the money build all the time, but we're not going to spend it either. So who does that benefit? It doesn't benefit anyone. You know, so, and it's like, just to go back to both of what you guys were talking about earlier on, you know, with Daniel Cummings. How come West Ham see something in this kid? How come West Ham are willing to fork out £600,000 for Daniel Cummings? Because obviously West Ham think Daniel Cummings is worth that. Why does our squad, or why does our club not think that Daniel Cummings is worth holding on to, or was past tense now because he signed a pre-contract, was worth holding on to?
As I say, Daniel Cummings has chosen not to sign a contract offer that he's had for Celtic. Celtic have finally got around to making Daniel Cummings a contract offer when he was well and truly sick of the place, when he was well and truly sick of how he was being treated. We finally got around to it, run about the time that West Ham started talking to him, run about the time that he had another offer and a better offer. And it's not even so much that it's a better offer, I don't think. I don't even think it's so much that it's a better offer. I just think that he, like a lot of other young players, sees Celtic as a dead end. Because Rodgers is right in a sense, if these guys are willing to be patient. But what does that mean? That means spending another 2 years under the tutelage of Darren O'Day and Stephen McManus. Don't think I would be up for that either. If I could go and work at a world-class academy and learn under top-class coaches, I don't think I'd be hanging around either.
Another aspect in this is the greedy boys syndrome. It's absolute nonsense. These guys whether it's Vata, Kelly, Cummings, or whoever.
Well, some of them, let's be honest, though, some of them went for money. Some of these guys do go for money.
Right. Some of these guys believe that.
No prospect to getting first team football anytime soon. But all of these guys know that anywhere else, they will develop into better players.
Yeah. And at the age of 16, these guys could have went elsewhere. Cummings signed a professional contract at Celtic. So did Vata, so did Kelly. I suspect these guys, their families spent hours and hours driving them about to training sessions, to matches, etc., etc. They wanted to make it at Celtic. They signed pro at Celtic. And when they found out what's inside at Celtic, they says, this ain't doing me any favours. My next stop's the Lowland League. So I'll go to Watford, I'll go to Leeds, I'll go to West Ham. And if I don't make it there, the drop down will be a bit more gradual. I might be playing League One in England. I might be playing League Two. Might even be playing non-league. But it's better than playing for BSC, for Stirling Uni. And a guy I know, Lewis Bell, was the captain of the Celtic, Celtic team that won the Glasgow Cup 4-0 at Ibrox in April 2016. Stephen Welsh, Jack Aitchison, Mikey Johnson, a few guys like that, Ewan Henderson, were teammates. Just now, Lewis Bell's playing for Gretna, and you're better off taking your chances, go down to England, get into their systems, and if it doesn't, Daniel Cummins will not be expecting to make it at West Ham, but if he has to fall down, there's a few more steps in the ladder to fall down, and if he can make it a championship club, as Liam Morrison's doing at QPR, that's a fantastic achievement. If it's further down, if it's League One or League Two, that's still a better level than the guys he's leaving behind at Celtic. Because if you look at any Celtic team sheet from a couple of years ago in the Lowland League, you'll be hard-pressed to find any of those guys still playing professional. But we're hitting the 70-minute mark, Eric. Maybe time to round up our anger and leave things to...
I'm trying to agree with you.
What I will say to that is that I have written some very harsh things about some of the young players that have left our club. Rocco got a hard time from me. Daniel Kelly definitely got a hard time. And there is a part of me that wants to give Daniel Cummings a hard time, especially after his social media post after coming on against Villa and then talking about how this will be the first of many. And to be blunt, I don't think he had any intention of staying at Celtic beyond this season. So first of many turned out not to be. I don't think he did himself any favours with that very, very silly thing to have done. But I have a certain amount of sympathy with the view that if Daniel Cummings signs a 3-year, 4-year deal at Celtic, stays for the duration of it, he's 22 by the time that contract ends. You can't ask that guy to play in the Lowland League until he's 22. You can't ask him to play in the Lowland League for another year or another 2 years, because any possibility of developing as a footballer is gone by then. And at the end of it, what? You've got a guy who will never be good enough to make the Celtic first team squad, and so he's hung around for nothing. And 2 years of his career are gone. Two of the most important developmental years are gone. And you never get them back. And he's a lesser footballer at the end of it with lesser options. And so maybe I was too hard on Vata and maybe I was too hard on Kelly, because they faced a very similar choice from where I'm sitting. They could have went back, could have signed their deals and hung around, played Lowland League football for the next 2 years and at the end of it, whatever they could have been no longer is, and their careers are wasted. So I don't know. I just know that we're not doing things. I just know that one transfer window is not the only problem here. There are serious problems at every level of our club, and that our success domestically has covered a multitude of sins for a long, long time. Long, long time. The unprofessionalism of some of the people who work at Celtic, the low level of ambition, the low level of imagination is holding us back in more ways than just this. But this has been a particularly disastrous 10 days since the match against young boys. It's been awful. Because we've advertised to the whole of Europe that we're not a serious club, that we don't take ourselves seriously as a major European team.
Yeah, and I don't think any of us expected it to go as far south as it has gone in the last 10 days. I mean, we were all on a high after Young Boys, and we were all delighted that we made it to the knockout phase in the Champions League. But
it's just a turnaround from that night. It's just a turnaround. I mean, I'm sitting here tonight and I'm going to the game tomorrow and I don't have any enthusiasm to go and watch my team tomorrow at all. Not one bit. I will go and I will sit in the stand and I'll watch it. But I don't feel any enthusiasm towards it. And I don't know when that will return.
Yeah.
But that's what pisses me off the most, because I know I'm not the only person who feels like this right now. I know a lot of our fans feel like this right now. And that's what they've taken away from us. They've taken that away from us. Because 2 weeks ago, we were coming out of the Young Boys game thinking, our club's headed for a new place. Or our club's headed for a whole different place now.
Yeah.
Within 24 hours, we'd sold our star striker. 2 weeks on, we failed to replace him. And we don't show any signs that the ambition that we all thought was being shown that night actually exists. It was a complete fog storm, and it's absolutely gutting to know that. Absolutely gutting.
Yeah. In summation, James, as you said, this was a therapy session. I think a few of us have vented, the group of us have vented collectively on how we feel about this whole thing. The reality is we could sit here and go on for another hour, another 2 hours, and it's not going to do anything.
We didn't even get into discussing the Daizen Maeda play him inside because the manager's happy with that lie, which is a lie, and I'm happy to call it that.
Yeah.
What about that? I think
we have gone way over time. And it's been a tough one. And thank you guys for your contribution tonight, because it's an important contribution tonight, because we need honesty and we need clarity from people who actually are looking at this from a realistic point of view and not the through cream tinted glasses, you know, which we all want to do, but unfortunately after a debacle like we've seen over the last 10 days, we can't do. And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. As always, guys, if you like what we're talking about, like, subscribe and share. We want to keep growing the podcast. We want to keep, you know, keep you guys entertained. And obviously, you'll see plenty on our blogs over the coming days. And look, maybe we'll get our enthusiasm back within it. You never know. Brendan Rodgers might perform a miracle at home against Bayern Munich, and we might all be on an ultimate high after that. But sure, look, that's the sort of, I suppose, thing that we need to look at. We need to try and be positive. We have to try and find positivity somewhere. But anyway, look, we'll call it for tonight, guys. And thanks a million for the contribution. It's been a good one. I can't really say it's been a good one, but it's been good, you know, in terms of the filtering we've done. So look, we'll see you next week, and I'm sure we'll have plenty more to talk about in the next session. So talk then. Take it easy.